The next LOS requires us to compare the disclosures relating to finance and operating leases. Both lessees and lessors are required to disclose useful information about finance leases and operating leases in the financial statements or in the footnotes, including general description of the leasing arrangement, amount of lease revenue and expense reported in the income statement for each period presented, amounts receivable and unearned revenues from lease arrangements, restrictions imposed by lease agreements, and the nature, timing, and amount of payments to be paid or received in each of the next 5 years. Lease payments after 5 years can be aggregated. For lessees, analysts often use the disclosures to estimate the off-balance sheet liabilities of operating leases. Now, we return to financial statement reporting of pension plans. The next LOS asks us to compare the presentation and disclosure of defined contribution and defined benefit pension plans. A pension is a form of deferred compensation earned over time through employee service. The most common pension arrangements are defined contribution plans and defined benefit plans. A defined contribution plan is a retirement plan in which the firm contributes a sum each period to the employee's retirement account. The firm's contribution can be based on any number of factors, including years of service, the employee's age, compensation, profitability, or even a percentage of the employee's contribution. In any event, the firm makes no promise to the employee regarding the future value of the plan assets. The investment decisions are left to the employee, who assumes all of the investment risk. The financial reporting requirements for defined contribution plans are straightforward. Pension expense is simply equal to the employer's contribution. There is no future obligation to report on the balance sheet as a liability. In a defined benefit plan, the firm promises to make periodic payments to employees after retirement. The benefit is usually based on the employee's years of service and the employee's compensation at or near retirement. For example, an employee might earn a retirement benefit of 2% of her final salary for each year of service. Consequently, an employee with 20 years of service and a final salary of $100,000 would receive $40,000 each year upon retirement until death. Because the employee's future benefit is defined, the employer assumes the investment risk. A company that offers defined pension benefits typically funds the plan by contributing assets to a separate legal entity, usually a trust. The plan assets are managed to generate the income and principal growth necessary to pay the pension benefits as they come due. Financial reporting for a defined benefit plan is much more complicated than for a defined contribution plan, because the employer must estimate the value of the future obligation to its employees. The obligation involves forecasting a number of variables, such as future compensation levels, employee turnover, average retirement age, mortality rates, and an appropriate discount rate. For a defined benefit plan, the net pension asset or net pension liability is a key element for analysis. If the fair value of the plan's assets is greater than the estimated pension obligation, the plan is said to be overfunded, and the sponsoring firm records a net pension asset on its balance sheet. If the fair value of the plan's assets is less than the estimated pension obligation, the plan is underfunded, and the firm records a net pension liability. The change in the net pension asset or liability is recognized on the firm's financial statements each year. Some components are included in net income, while others are recorded as other comprehensive income. IFRS and U.S. GAAP treat some of these items differently. Under IFRS, three components make up the change in net pension asset or liability: service costs, net interest expense or income, and remeasurements. Pension expense on the income statement is the sum of service costs and the net interest expense or income. Remeasurements are recognized as other comprehensive income. Service cost is the present value of additional benefits earned by an employee over the year. Net interest expense or net interest income is the beginning value of the net pension liability or asset, multiplied by the discount rate assumed when determining the present value of plan assets. This discount rate is chosen by management, but should reflect the yield of a highly rated corporate bond. Remeasurements are the third component. These include actuarial gains or losses and the difference between the actual return on plan assets and the return included in net interest expense or income. Under IFRS, remeasurements are not amortized to the income statement over time. Under U.S. GAAP, five components make up the change in net pension asset or liability. Pension expense in the current period has three components: service costs, net interest expense or income, and the expected return on plan assets. A positive expected return decreases pension expense. Two components are recognized in other comprehensive income: past service costs, which are retroactive benefits awarded to employees when a plan is initiated or amended, and actuarial gains or losses. These are amortized to pension expense, which allows companies to smooth their effects on pension expenses over time. Under U.S. GAAP, the difference between the actual and expected return on plan assets is included in actuarial gains and losses. For manufacturing companies, under either IFRS or U.S. GAAP, pension expense is allocated to inventory and cost of goods sold for employees who provide direct labor to production, and to salary or administrative expense for other employees. As a result, pension expense does not appear separately on the income statement for manufacturing companies. An analyst must examine the financial statement notes to find the details of these companies' pension expense. The last LOS for this topic review requires us to calculate and interpret leverage and coverage ratios. Analysts use solvency ratios to measure a firm's ability to satisfy its long-term obligations. In evaluating solvency, analysts look at leverage ratios and coverage ratios. Leverage ratios focus on the balance sheet by measuring the amount of debt in a firm's capital structure. For calculating these ratios, debt refers to interest-bearing obligations. Non-interest-bearing liabilities, such as accounts payable, accrued liabilities, and deferred taxes, are not considered debt. The debt-to-assets ratio equals total debt divided by total assets. It measures the percentage of total assets financed with debt. The debt-to-capital ratio equals total debt divided by the sum of total debt and total equity. This measures the percentage of total capital financed with debt. Debt-to-capital is similar to the debt-to-assets ratio, except that total capital excludes non-interest-bearing liabilities. The debt-to-equity ratio equals total debt divided by total equity. It measures the amount of debt financing relative to the firm's equity base. A firm whose debt-to-equity ratio is 1.0 has equal amounts of debt and equity. Stated differently, its debt-to-capital ratio is 50%. The financial leverage ratio equals average total assets divided by average total equity. This is the measure of leverage used in the DuPont formula. All of these leverage ratios are interpreted similarly. That is, the higher the ratio, the higher the leverage. When comparing firms, analysts must remember that in some countries, debt financing is more popular than equity financing. Firms in these countries will have higher leverage. Coverage ratios focus on the income statement by measuring the sufficiency of earnings to repay interest and other fixed charges when due. Two popular coverage ratios are the interest coverage ratio and the fixed charge coverage ratio. The interest coverage ratio equals earnings before interest and taxes divided by interest payments. A firm with lower interest coverage will have more difficulty meeting its interest payments. The fixed charge coverage ratio equals earnings before interest and taxes plus lease payments divided by the sum of interest payments and lease payments. This ratio is similar to interest coverage ratio, but more inclusive because operating lease payments are added to the numerator and denominator. Significant operating lease payments will reduce this ratio as compared to interest coverage. fixed charge coverage is more meaningful for firms that engage in significant operating leases.